Welcome to this episode of Balls of Wisdom. This is where I take the opportunity to take a step away from the Super Yacht Laundry podcast and talk to some male voices from the super yacht industry. And today I'm joined by Captain James, who's in the gorgeous Cannes, although he has made me feel better saying that it's raining. So that makes me feel a little bit better. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm all good. Not too bad. Well, I say that, actually. I've got a cold, which I seem to have got from my kids. Just January is that month where you just get lurgy after lurgy after lurgy from children. So, seem to have got it now. So, I'm all right.
Children are super spreaders.
Yeah, exactly.
They are. So I wanted to speak to you. So you obviously came into, I don't know, into my sphere of, in the industry, we have a lot of voices. Let's put it this way. But yours kind of stood out to me because there are a lot of individuals talking, but not many probably as frank as yourself about what captains are facing, what crew are facing. Obviously, there's been a few, you've wrote passionately about a few things. So I really wanted to get you on because I think a voice that's perhaps not being heard the way that we want is the voice of captains. So it was important for me to get you on. But before we start talking about what you're up to now and the amazing things, I just want to kind of set the scene. You know, how did the super yacht industry arrive in your life at the beginning? Well, what was young James doing and how did he end up on a super yacht?
Many, many moons ago. I grew up in the sort of usual optimist as a 5-6-year-old started sailing, and we had family friends who had a place in the Isle of Wight. So we used to go to theirs in Seaview, and then I got into Toppers and then Wayfarers, and then ended up down your neck of the woods in Chichester on International 14s with my brother. And yeah, I loved it. I feel at home. My grandfather was in the Navy, and I don't know, I just feel at home at sea. And basically I was in the city, did all right for myself. And then when the tsunami happened, was actually just going to go travelling and go and help out in the tsunami and see if I could help. And one of the guys who worked for me, or with me, was his brother was the sous chef on Le Grand Bleu at the time. And he was like, well, why don't you go and work on super yachts? And I was like, super what? And he was like, super yachts, it's a job. And you work on, and I was like, whoa, okay. And like, how do I do this? He's like, look, I'll put you in touch with my brother. This is well before mobile phones and all that. So basically, I flew down to Antibes and checked into the trusty old school original crew house just off the roundabout. And yeah.
What is that called? I don't know. It's been called loads of things, but I can't remember what it was.
Well, yeah,
it's basically the roughest crew house that existed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, exactly. Like, yeah, I turned up there thinking I was having a nice room and a key. And yeah, I walked upstairs to find guy naked on the top bunk, another guy in bed with his girlfriend on the bottom bunk, and then some old boy on the bottom bunk on this one. And I was like, whoa, okay, gonna leave my worldly possessions with some random strangers. But you know, that was yachting, and I think to an element it still is to a point. You know, and I think it's quite good. It gets you used to sharing that space, and you have to put up with some pretty interesting characters, some who are there to like put their head down and graft and go out and try and find a job, and some who are just there to party. So it's not a bad opener for kind of getting you set for, you know, a potential career. And I think when you get onto a yacht, it's actually quite pleasant by comparison, because it's like, wow, okay, now I'm a cabin, I get my food and all this kind of stuff. And it's quite a nice relief if you've only been in a crew house. So I think it's not a bad setting really to get you started for what's to come.
Crew houses are chaos, like, you know, and I feel like after hearing some of the stories about that crew house particularly. I feel spoiled having gone to like the Grapevine, and being,
Yeah, I mean,
being so well organized and, nice
can I just say,
environment.
I was only in that crew house for a week, because then I did take an apartment because it was a little bit much for me. But I still, you kind of make your initial friends, and then you go and hang out at the crew house for your network, and you kind of use it for what it is what I did anyway. But it was great. It was, yeah, it was an eye opener. I'm not used to having that kind of intensity of some of the characters that I happened to be in that crew house with at that time. But I've made some lifelong friends from that initial, like H.E., a mate of mine who's back home in Scotland. Like, we're still in touch, and that's 21 years ago. So, I mean, you do definitely create a bond.
You do create in the chaos. I was said earlier, after the chaos, which generally is your experience of crew houses and trying to find work, you're kind of the relief of getting on board. It just, you're just like, and let's kind of relax, because it was, it is. I think it's a really good acid test, actually, with how keen you are to
I
want
think
to
you're spot
get
on.
into the industry, especially 20 years ago. It was harder because you would have to get out there to make connections. You will have to go to like the Blue Lady and stuff like that, because
This is
sending
the
your
thing.
CV off wasn't probably.
The internet was in, like, they had an internet cafe, and that's how you did it. Like, you had to go, and it was far more paper CVs, and you had to give out, and it was a phone interview if you had an interview. You didn't sort of necessarily get to sit like we are now on the end of a screen, so you get to see the person. So yeah, it was a very different time, but I think the fundamentals of it are the same. You kind of have the crazy and the structure, and then you kind of pick which one you're going to go with. Good old Yossi.
Yeah, it's crazy time. I mean, they're like, it's South France is, I think everybody should start there. It's the best introduction to how crazy it can be when you start your career. But obviously having a pedigree in sailing would have helped you get on board fairly quickly, I imagine. Your job search wasn't too intense.
It was re well. I arrived in, thankfully, I arrived in June, and then there was a reason, because a lot of people I find arrive quite early into the season, like kind of March time. I wrote an article about it recently, because that's when they arrive. But then most of the yachts have been in winter mode, doing all their winter maintenance, and there's not really a need for additional crew at that stage. Whereas when things start to get going, for the Cannes Film Festival, Monaco GP, the most of the people have actually run out of money by that stage and have either gone home or got a job. And it's almost like that second wave of sort of recruitment. The people who did get employed early on have either sort of been successful and maintain that job, or have realized it's not for them, and then there's this like second wave of recruitment, or they had no idea about what was really going to be going on because they've watched Below Deck or whatever and think it is just partying and drinking, and do exactly that, and unsurprisingly get fired, and then find themselves back home. And yeah, it's an industry that certainly has certain patterns to it, I find. But the ones who turn up and put their head down, on the whole, kind of tend to make it. And I was lucky, as you say, coming from a sailing background and being sport orientated. I think when you have that team sport mentality and you know what it takes, that you are an integral part of a team, it's really important, because you value other people's input, as opposed to it being just me and I think about myself. And you can't have that attitude in yachting, that it's just about me and I've got to think about me, because it doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. And it's, it is, 100% a team environment. So once you were on board, you know, obviously after, you know, sailing for fun is different to working. Can you remember what your first impression
Weirdly, my first ever captain, my first ever chief engineer, and my first ever bosun, who are still incredibly good mates of mine, phoned me from Dan's now looking after his father, who's got dementia. So he's caring for him and has left the industry because of that. And they all were sitting around a table and they were like, oh, let's call Batty. And they rang me. And I've not spoken to Dan for many years. But yeah, so I got a job on Jamaica Bay in the end of August of that 2005. Because I was fortunate enough, I had a bit of money behind me and they needed someone with a B1, B2 visa. So there weren't any appointments around here. So I actually flew to Dublin and got that and then flew back, got picked up from Nice and taken straight to San Remo. And then we crossed, it was horrendous. Our first crossing was in September. So it was brutal getting over. Kind of got caught in between two hurricanes, which was a joy. So as my first exposure, it was, it was interesting. But I had a great bunch and I've got lifelong friends from it. And that crew on there, I mean, bear in mind that I saw them, the new Jamaica Bay in Saint-Tropez this season. I was going in on the tender and I sort of swung in to see Kurt, the chef, still on there. Ryan, who was the first officer, is now the captain. Fluffy, Brett, who's no longer Fluffy because he's bald. He used to be a decky below here. He joined after me. He's now the first officer on there rotating. But they have it right because they've looked after. They're not worried about seeing different faces all the time. They've stuck with what they have and the crew have stayed. I mean, that just tells you everything about the environment on board that boat. And I think when you see that, you want that for everyone because it is an awesome industry if done right. It's the best.
Yeah.
You know, on here, I work for an amazing owner. I brought all my crew with me from my previous boat. They are a great bunch and we're like a family on here. Yeah, and we have problems because that's inevitable. But it's how you deal with those problems. And also you have to deal with them straight out the gate. You can't let things fester. I've discussed this quite a few times about, you know, silly things like people coming out of a shower, putting their towel on a bed. I had it early on in my career and I lost my mind and I looked like a psychopath because the chef had left his wet towel on my bed and then he put his boxer shorts on my pillow and I came in to that and I lost my mind. So, you know, you have to be
boxer
aware.
Shorts on the pillow, though. I'm with you on that.
Yeah. It was just, you know, because he was on the top bunk, so he just got out because he also got up later than everyone else because he was the chef on board. And then he would just basically put his clothes, because I was on the bottom bunk, put his clothes on my bunk and think that that was okay. And he didn't know how to share space, which is one of the biggest things that you need to be okay with in this environment. And unfortunately, and that's fine. That's, you know, lots of people can't, but this maybe isn't the right place for you to be, if that is you.
I mean, it's one of those things. I find it really interesting that, you know, your first crew have stayed together. Because if you kind of put it in context, you know, your first voyage doing a crossing, September's a bit early for a crossing. Is that why the weather was
too early? That's why. We go north, then into Newport. It was brutal. Absolutely brutal.
Well, the thing is, if you can face that together as a crew, then everything else kind of, you know, it's a bit more trivial. But then again, like you said, you know, the trivial things can end up being massive. Just like, I mean, I would literally lose my shit if somebody left pants on my pillow. But when in early doors, you know, like some people, you know, you can't you can pick somebody out of like a bunch of CVs and after conversations, but you don't know what they grew up with. You know, my mum was quite, you know, very house proud, very particular. So when you go onto a boat, you know, it wasn't a big deal for me because I came from an environment where my mum would constantly tell me off and gave me jobs to do on a Sunday to tidy the house, you know. Yeah. So it wasn't alien. But not everybody comes from the same, you know, same setup. So certain things for others are difficult.
But this is why, I mean, I said the other day on an article on LinkedIn, I think as part of your SDCW, when you're starting out, you should essentially have to live in that environment. So you live with the people you're on a course with and you get given roles to do, much like a watchkeeper, so that you become part and you can start to get used to that. And you may well finish that course and go, mm-mm, that's not for me. If that's what it's like, I'm not interested. Because going out, you know, doing your SDCW, going to the pool, going to the fire centre, and then finishing at 5, and then going to the Blue Lady, having a few beers, having a skinful, and then kind of falling into bed, isn't reality. It's great for the crew, but it's not reality. You know, whereas the reality is, you know, you're on call 24/7. You know, we get into bed. If an alarm goes off at 2 o'clock in the morning, you're dealing with it. You know, it's not like, oh, I'm not at work, boss isn't on, I'm not dealing with that. You're dealing with it. And you need to be in that mentality of having that level of professionalism, I suppose.
When obviously you went on, obviously you've gone on to different boats and stuff like that. Did you always fancy yourself as a captain, or is it something? Because I was speaking to somebody the other day on a different podcast. And we were talking about that there isn't really anywhere else to go within, you know, on a boat. You know, you're either good at man management or not. But it because there is no other option, do people end up as captains because that's ultimately it, which shouldn't be captains? Like, did you say, I'm really good at managing people, I'm going to be a captain? Or do I want to get paid the big bucks, I want to be a captain? Or both?
Well, crikey, I don't think either of those. I didn't think to myself, I'm really good at managing people. I really enjoy like crew and people. I'm a people person. You know, I do enjoy being around my crew, and we do have a family environment where I try and keep everyone on that same level. There isn't this, I'm more important than you and you must do this for me, because everyone in a crew plays just as much important role as the next person. You know, if the girls aren't doing the laundry, cleaning the cabins, you know, it's just as important as if I'm not getting stuff organised in terms of our navigation or the boys outside. You know, everyone has their part to play. And I think when you get that idea in your head that everyone is just as important as each other, it creates that decent environment that you want. And, you know, it's difficult because you do get people who are like, well, I'm this job and I'm that, I should have this and I should have that. And it's like, well, no, not really, because if she doesn't do that or he doesn't do that, then it has the same knock-on effect. So, you know, we all have our equal responsibility on board, really.
But for you, it wasn't, I'm going to be a captain one day. You just kind of went with the flow.
I went with the flow, but also I think you reach that. If you're not, and this sounds dreadful actually, but if you're not a particular people person, quite a few people, you know, start on deck and then maybe do their AEC and then maybe go down the engineering route, because you can be, and I know engineers get a bad rap as being the kind of person that just sits in their ECR fixing things, getting angry at people and come out and grumble. But you're not as guest-facing down the engineering route as you are as captain. You know, as captain, you're dealing with crew, you're dealing with management, you're dealing with ports, you're dealing with, like, you are essentially your boat dad, where you're, you know, and you have to deal with people and their emotional stuff. Because, you know, only 2 years ago, unfortunately, I lost a crew member on board in Nice, and it was one of my very good mates' girlfriends, and Amber was a good friend of mine as well. They both come to stay at my house in Wales, and I loved her dearly, and it's a brutal thing to have to deal with. And you are a family, and you will bicker, and you will have problems on board, obviously, because family, it doesn't matter, you have the same within your family, you know, there's little bickering and whatnot, but it's how you deal with it. And it's really important to have a positive environment on board where people can flourish and people feel like they can actually come and talk to you about something. Not just like, oh, it's the captain, I'm not going to go and talk to him, or, you know, I'll only talk to my head of department and I'll relay that. It's, you have to have that open door approach, I feel, personally.
Well, it's also making them feel confident that you can deal with it. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? There's a trust element. You know, if you feel like your captain is competent, you know, you will open up to them, especially about stuff like that. But that kind of trust, you know, the work is obviously an important part, but also how you interact in the crew mess, what you sent out. Because it's one of those things, I've got a stepson that's entered the industry, and, you know, my only advice to him was, like, it's always work. You know, it could be 11 o'clock at night, but don't be under any illusion, you're still at work. Do you know what I mean? You're not doing your daily task, but you're still at work. You have to respect the environment that you're in. But also, you know, that comes. It comes from the top as well. You know, it really does. You know, the respect. Because, I mean, I've worked on one boat. I worked on, and we were going to be up for sale. That was the rumor, everything else. So it all got really loose. But that, you know, the captain just, you know, he was going. So he decided to have a good time. But you could see the domino effect, like, because he was kind of not bothered anymore, it kind of trickled down to everybody. Well, and then obviously then it all just started to kind of snowball and get a bit wild.
Yeah. It's the same when you have a crew member who's leaving. You know, if they're serving a month's notice, to me, I think that's actually really bad, because, you know, they start talking about, I really don't like that on board. And, you know, I can't wait to go to my next job. And I can't. And it's like, it's actually quite negative for all the crew that are sitting there listening to this. And, you know, I think from my perspective, when crew have decided to go, it's like you just move on and you push forward. I've always thankfully had good crew who worked their notice period. Like my first officer, Lawrence, just left. He left last year as well, but came back. But, you know, I'm about teaching people and I want them to push on and get the best for them. And I think through sharing knowledge, I think when you get people who are like, no, I'm not, well, can I show you this? And it's like, no, well, it's not really, you don't need to know that. It's like, well, why are you withholding that information really from someone? Is it because you don't maybe know that yourself and therefore you don't want someone to see the gaps in your knowledge? Or, you know, and you can't profess to know everything. Every day is a school day for me. I learn something every day, like from different people as to what's going on. And also, if you don't use it every day, you lose it. So you can't always be at the top of your game in every area of your job. You know, you have to keep fine tuning things, and you know, we have the winters of maintenance, and this is the thing. You kind of, you're full on from our season starts April 1st, finishes October, mid October, by the time we kind of shut everything down, winterize, so to speak, and then go into a maintenance period. It's like, when do you actually really get to switch off? Because my leave entitlement is 90 days, but then do I go, right, I'm out, phone off, boop, no more boat stuff, 3 months. It doesn't work like that. Because then if you do that, stuff doesn't get done. And then the owner's like, well, what's happened to my boat? So it's a very strange one to try and balance and juggle. Hence the reason that, you know, I'm a great believer in pushing for rotation. And I do think, in this industry, over a certain size, it should be standard. And I would love to see, and this is a weird one, and but much like airline crew, my stepdad was a commercial pilot for 35 years, and much like airline crew come as a whole and they swap out, I think crew, because you know everyone's foibles and you know your crew and you work with your crew. And I've found when I've coming through the ranks, I've had rotational captains, you always have a favourite. And, you know, you've learned how one works and then you're like, oh no, because that's not how Peter or Simon likes it. So I have to change and I have to do it this way. And I think that kind of slightly ruins the dynamic. Whereas I think if you came as a unit and you were like, cool, high five in, everyone turns up with that kind of fresh face. Let's go. We've got 8 weeks. Let's smash it out. The owner gets the best experience because everyone's happy to be there. And they're kind of refreshed and come with a sort of a kind of fresh faced look. And I think it would be quite a nice concept.
I've never heard of that before. That would be quite, you know, it's.
Well, I mean, you know your job and you know your boat. So if obviously there's going to be a point when you get the new crew and you find your opposite number, that you're like, you're going to go through your handovers of everything that, you know, needs to be done. But once you've got that, there's no reason it couldn't work. And then everyone turns up and you've got none of this like, oh no, but Peter likes this or Lucy likes it like that, or she can be a bit funny about this. And you just turn up and you know everyone. It's like, that's my engineer. Him and I work together and we get on. And that's my chief stew. That's my, you know, purse or whatever. So it's a thought. It is a thought.
I quite like that concept. I
don't see why it wouldn't work. And I think, you know, in this industry, it's a luxury industry. Now, when you talk about luxury for me has never been about cost. You don't go, oh, I want that Birkin handbag. And they go, well, how much is it? Ooh, how much is that? It doesn't. You just go, right, you want that because it's exclusive. Not everyone can have it. Do you know what I mean? And I think we've somewhat lost that because it's always, now the metrics come back to money and that has sort of become a focus point. And I think we need to move back the other way, back to its luxury and, you know, giving people the most amount of support and everything like that that they can get in terms of training, financial remuneration, you know, all of that, just trying to get everything together. Which is where, obviously, my concept of creating the platform came from, but we'll come to that.
Before we get on to the platform, I just wanted to talk about, like, captains. From your opinion, how are captains? What's the morale like at the moment in the captain community? Because from, you know, obviously what I read, I've worked with captains, but I've never been, obviously not been a captain. One of the things, you know, obviously common, a real prominent thing recently is mental health and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And from an outsider looking in, you know, having to think about the captain's role, it's a bit like when you think about your husband, although I, you know, obviously take the mickey out of my husband. Men deal with stress and compounded stress a lot differently to what women do. Obviously, I talk to women all day and I am one, so it's really easy. With captains being asked to do more or understand more. So obviously, you know, you've got great wealth of knowledge about how to, you know, all the regulations, moving boats, all of that kind of stuff. But most of your, you know, obviously what we said, most of your job is man management. Which a lot of the regulations and training probably doesn't highlight as much as it should. And especially currently with the whole mental health things, and it's been said many times, you know, individuals, if they were struggling with mental health, might not go to their captain. The captain might be very good at lots of things, but might not be the go-to person for mental support. But also, would they want to take it on? You know, taking on the responsibility to try and help maintain somebody with mental health with no training. You know, I'm not saying that captains aren't capable of, but it doesn't seem, you know, that there is a lot of training you know, that they are being given time to do, because I also think that that's something that they should do in work time, not at, you know, obviously a lot of time, you know, you have to do it when you're on leave. But I just wondered, you know, with the amount that's being put on captains, and obviously there is a great push within the industry to be safer and more aware and everything else, like, how are captains feeling about all of this?
I think from my perspective as a captain, I feel like you have to wear many hats, and, you know, it is a challenge, because you do have to deal with crew, navigation, management, various organizations, changing legislation, you know, there's a lot going on, and you have to deal with all of it. And it's, as you said, you know, the training aspect of it, you have to do in your own time on the whole, not always. Some great yachts, you know, give that paid training time, but that is rare. It's not something that's industry standard. And I think that's the problem. There is no such thing as a standard. You know, this is the problem. The standard can be taken as to what the person, that particular yacht, feels is the standard, you know, and this is where I find there's a problem, you know, as wages, you know, in my view, they haven't gone anywhere since I joined. Deckies are still getting the paid the same as when I entered the industry. Stewardess is the same. You know, that's 21 years. Like, what other industry in the world are wages still the same as what they were 21 years ago? It, like, none. Doesn't exist. So, and then everything's been added on to, oh yeah, by the way, and you need to do this, and the paperwork side, and you have to fill in this, and you have to give us this report, and you've got to do these accounts, and by the way, Sophie's not feeling very well because, unfortunately, you know, one of her parents isn't very well. All of this is all falls at your doorstep. And I think there's maybe the infrastructure and support system isn't there within yachting. And I think that's the problem. We don't have industry standard. It's not like, this is where you'll go. This is the career path you have. This is the training you need. This is the mental health support. This is, like, all packaged together for you, and you will be guided on your journey. Like most careers, it's like you get into banking, you have to do these exams, your FSA, like you have to do certain things, and you're guided on that, and your company will go, well, yeah, no problem, you're working for us, so we'll assist you with that training, we'll do that because it's in our benefit. And I think we need to steer yachting in that direction of going, well, this is important. You know, if you want people to perform at the highest level, you have to support them on that journey. And I don't feel that exists. I work for an amazing owner, so I'm very fortunate. But there are, like, they're not huge amounts of them out there. You hear some horror stories, you hear some great stories, but on the whole, there is no industry standard. Everyone talks about, in our industry standard wages. Well, what is that? Define it for me. You know,
I mean, it's something that's really, you know, interested me, like, as we're aware of different things, you know, like I said, I use the example of mental health. I spoke to a captain when I was in Amsterdam, not last year, but the year before, and we were talking about different issues and stuff like that. And he said, what he said to me was, you know, I just want to be told what to do. Do you know what I mean? In some respects, I think captains could do with more guidance, you know. So I think I use the talking about how you deal with a rape scenario on board, whether that's a guest being raped or a member of crew. Like, what's the policy? Mm-hmm. What do you, yeah, you know, what guidelines are you given to deal with that scenario? Because I know, obviously, a lot of, you know, when you're doing first officer and all of these things, how to deal with a dead body, you know, it's all kind of written out for things you need to do. And he just said, whatever the thing is, it'd just be nice for them to just say, we want you to do this as a bare minimum. Like, it sounds like some of the regulations could maybe be a bit more expanded with all now our new knowledge and what we want to implement. A bit more guidance from, you know, the baseline could then have a ripple effect, you know, especially when you're talking about investing in in courses and extra training, if you raise your baseline of what qualifications you need, then the ripple effect has more. You've pushed the conversation on, right? This was where we started. Okay, we want a little bit more qualifications. We want to give them access to more management training, blah, 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 because it's changed the nature of the job. Do you think that would be more, would it add value or could?
I don't know whether adding more training necessarily. I think training in certain aspects, like management of people, like as a captain, obviously, you can manage teams on the largest yachts of like 60, 70 people. I know the purser and everything else has their part to play as well. But at the end of the day, the captain, the buck stops with the captain. The same on aircraft, the same on anything. You know, that's why you have four stripes. You know, it's the buck stops with you. So I think management training in terms of how to deal with people, I think should be an integrated course. But again, it's courses that then falls at the responsibility of the person, the crew member, as opposed to the owner and company maybe employing that crew member. You know, you should want these people to be trained to the utmost level so that you get the most and the best experience when you're on board. And I think that's maybe where it falls short. But adding more courses for this, that and the other, it's like, when are you going to fit them in? This is the problem, you know. Like you say, a lot of crew have limited holiday, and then you're asked to take out of that limited holiday, you're asked to then go and sit in a classroom for the benefit of the yacht. And it's like, well, hang on, I'm doing this for your benefit, but it's coming out of my leave. It doesn't, you could leave. It's like, well, hang on a minute. Yeah, I could. But if you're thinking like that initially, then what kind of environment am I working in anyway? If you're that,
I mean, on land, you know, businesses pay for people to go on courses all of the time. So, you know, it is a bit of an anomaly within the industry. You know, if you do want to push on and learn more, they have to come out of your own time, which you don't have tons of time.
Yeah, but also like going to various like Mets and things like that, going to these events where everyone's discussing crew. The super yacht forum, everyone's discussing crew, but how many crew are in the room? Like, how can you talk about a group of people and their livelihoods and stuff that affects them directly without having them there? It makes no sense to me. And I feel like that needs to change. Like, get a camera in the room, allow people access. You're talking about us, let us listen to it. And let us then relay to you whether, yes, you're right, we do feel that way, or no, that's not true. It's like, why wouldn't you allow that exposure, or are you actually hiding something? And I think that's the problem. And as soon as you close a door on someone, you start those cogs turning in someone's mind going, well, hang on a minute, what are you talking about in there? It's the same as anyone, oh, no, you're not. We'll tell you about it afterwards. What? Why? That's, you're talking about my job and my livelihood and my industry, but it's like having a conference for waiters at Mets Trade, getting them to serve on the event and then having them walk into a conference room and closing the door on them, being like, we'll let you know what we talked about when we come out. What? No thanks.
Yeah.
It's,
also, like, you know, it, one of those things, you if they're not part of the conversation, how much are you actually going to achieve? You know, and also, you know, I've mentioned before, you know, this year I'll be 10 years off the boats, you know, 20 years since starting. It isn't the same as what we experienced when we started. You know, just, these nuances of different, how crew are, you know, educated on board, how they socialise on board. It's changed again, you know, and if they're not even in the room to have, you know, talk about these in these conversations, how on earth are you supposed to be able to keep up?
But you're sat there in Chichester and I'm here in Cannes, okay? Like, the proof is in the pudding. We can do it. We can have a chat thousands of miles away, but yet we can't put a camera in a room about a conference that's discussing our livelihoods. Of course we can. is we can't use that anymore. We can't use that excuse. We've got technology. Technology has moved and has changed a lot in this industry as well. You know, some for the better, some for the worse. You know, social media is good in some aspects, very bad in others. But, you know, it's the technology's here. We have the reason. We don't have this like, well, it just takes a long time. We need the data. And then when we get this year's data, we can compare it to next year's data. It's like, but what are you doing with the data? Like, what are you actually doing with it? And if nothing's changing, it's just, it's a lot of chat, basically. And I feel like there's a lot of chat and a lot of everyone banging drums when certain things happen in this industry and going, we must change, we must change. And then it starts to do this, disappear. And then nothing ever happens. Then it happens again. And everyone goes, this is outrageous. This is the second time this has happened. And it's like, yeah, you didn't do anything the first time it happened. So what makes anyone think you're going to do anything the second time? It's just, unless we actually make changes, nothing's going to change.
No. Oh, but it's also changing, you know, the conversation has been very, I would say, stunted for a while. But if you don't change the conversation and maybe change the questions that you're asking, you might not ever get to, you know, get to the answers. And I think that's what's interesting at the moment. There is definitely a lot more people just looking for different ways to approach some of the issues that are affecting the yachting industry at the moment. Again, like yourself, you know, looking at ways to kind of bring people together and distribute the right information to the right people. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about, which nobody really, you know, doesn't generally give an awful lot of airtime to, is obviously we're talking mainly about your work. You know, we're talking about how you feel at work and how you deal with work and everything else. By the time you're a captain, you've got a life. You've got children. You've got a wife. You've got a house. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not, I think one of the things that is quite easily overlooked is we super hyper-focus on what's going on board. When, you know, and especially with men as well, when you're, you know, bills to pay, you know, it is, you know, you obviously you've got quite a nice owner, but like you can go through, you know, changing boats, massive amounts of responsibility, massive amounts of bills to pay, children being away from your family.
You sell your soul to this job because you dedicate, you have to, you can't half-ass it. You know, you're either in or you're out. And when you do, as you've rightly identified, you're like, I've got four kids and my wife, we live in Pembrokeshire, and it's tough because, you know, I don't see them for 9 months of the year. You know, that's 9 months of the year that I don't, yes, I see them on the phone, but that's not the same. That's not the same as seeing your kids, holding your children, holding your wife. It's not. And unfortunately, a lot of captains lose that relationship, you know, and that happens. And like, we've been close, and like, I hold my hand up to it, and a lot of it's been me because you have to be like, I can't, it's work, I have to deal with it. And it's like, but you're home, why can't you, like, you're home, like, you're not at work, you're on leave. And it's like, yeah, but I have to deal with this, because if I don't, then, and it's unbelievably tough. And unless you have a wife who's understanding of that, luckily my wife is, she was the chief stew herself, so she knows the industry, but you really have to give your soul and everything into it, because you can't be like, I'll deal with that another time. Boop, hang up. I'm not answering, that's the boss. Boop, boop, I'm on leave. You'll get the message. It doesn't, like, no chance. You do that, you're looking for a new job.
Well, and also, you know, and you can't look for it, you know, it's not that easy to find, you know, a decent captain role and the salary that you need, because obviously that's paying your mortgage. You know, it's a self-professing. And also, we said this when I spoke to you just recently. One of the things, it's not just captains, it's the industry completely, and chief stews definitely fall victim to this. Because we're in the business of kind of meeting or exceeding expectations, you know, we are yes people. We want to say yes before we say no, or maybe we will, you know, we will want to try and make the impossible happen. Yeah, but it's unfortunately then that makes a self-fulfilling you know, prophecy, because you're so reactive, because you've said yes, because you've made it happen, you know, when you've responded on a Sunday lunchtime when you're literally supposed to be having, you know, a lunch out with your family and stuff like that. Unfortunately, the next time that they ask, you kind of, if you're not there, sometimes you can make it even worse for yourself. So there's no, there's kind of no way to get around it. But like, no, but also you've got the same, you get it flipped round. You know, you're, you know, a child, God forbid, has fallen sick. Your wife's trying to get hold of you and she can't because, you know, the boss, or you're traveling somewhere. The amount of grief that you'll get, and guilt that you'll feel that you can't be there and can't be reactive. You know, guilt is something that I think also we don't talk about, like feeling guilty for being away. Yes, you're at work and yeah, you're paying bills. But you still feel bad if you're not there for a birthday or someone's died or, you know, all of those things. And these are all the things that you carry whilst trying to deal with the impossible job on board.
Yeah, you miss all these key events. Like, you can't, in the middle of like July, be like, my best mate's getting married. Sorry, I know you've got your, you know, silver wedding anniversary party on board, but you're going to have to get someone in to drive the boat. It's like, what? Sorry? It's like, yeah, but I need to have that weekend off because my best mate, I'm the best man. It's like, that's not happening. On the whole, not to say that it doesn't in some boats with great owners, my owner would more than likely be like, no, go, as long as you give someone enough notice. But at the same time, you miss major life events. I've missed birth of two of my children. I've missed, God knows, I can't even count how many weddings I've missed. It's just, it's wrong. But it's what you sacrifice for doing the job we do. So, you know, where is the happiness?
Well, you know, there's every job that you do, there's a payoff somewhere. You know, you could be working all the hours God sent on land. Do you know what I mean? It's not exclusive to, you know, to the industry. But I think, you know, having rotation, do you know what I mean? That you could have a rotational part and you go, I know I'm supposed to be rotated on in July. Is there any way we can swap and then maybe you could have Christmas and I get to go to this wedding? Do you know what I mean? At least there's some flexibility in it. If you don't have rotation, then there's no option. You are then, you know, you're probably less likely because then you're asking them to bring somebody in, especially that they've never worked with, to cover while you're away, which doesn't happen, to be honest. They don't do that. You know, it's not happened. But then if at least that was an option, you'd have happier crew because they're not missing out as much. Yeah. You know, but the pressure at home is less.
This is it. But it's a really simple science, because a happy crew is a happy boat, and a happy boat is a happy owner. Like, get that bit right and the rest falls. Like, you can be on the most amazing, all singing, all dancing boat with three helicopters, two swimming pools, but if the crew aren't happy because it's a toxic environment, it doesn't make any difference about all the bells and whistles. Whereas on the other hand, you could be in a rowing boat, but if you're sat opposite someone who you get on with famously, jobs are gooden. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's the underlying point. Crew makes the experience what it is. Like, that's the most important aspect of being on board. It's the same in any service industry, hotels, restaurants. You can have the finest food, but if it's plonked down in front of you and, like, eat that, you're like, whoa, okay. Whereas if it's like, there you go, sir, here's your dinner, it's like, oh, this is amazing. You know, that's it. It's the environment. It's the environment that makes the experience.
But also, that's really difficult to quantify, you know, and I think that's maybe what I hope. You know, being able to have longer conversations and kind of thrash out ideas and perspectives, is the industry might see that, yes, you know, like you said about pay, you know, you're not paying people, you know, it's not going up with inflation or anything of that nature, but the crew and how they interact with each other make the whole entire experience. You know, you are, you know, can you... what is it about that team that just seems to gel together? And it also works in crisis situations, you know, when something's gone really, really bad. If you've got a solid crew, they can make it seem like nothing's happened. Do you know what I mean? Like, they can literally conquer all kinds of adversity. You know how to read
your colleagues, and that comes with loyalty and everything else, because you're like, okay, right, I've got your back. It's not even a question. Doesn't even enter your mind like, oh, I'm not going in there. Yeah. It's like, I'm behind you, let's go. And that's what you want in a crew. You want people who don't ask why. They're just, I'm with you, let's go. Like, you're saying yes, I'm doing it as well. If, like, I trust you. You know, and that's what you have. I mean, we had it on a previous boat where we had really unbelievably bad weather when we were in Ibiza, and everyone just came together and wallop, straight on with it. And it's like, this is awesome. And then you know you've done something right. They don't ask why, what, they just do. And that saves lives at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, we do forget sometimes that we're actually at sea. We're talking about all these things. It is a dangerous place, you know. We need to be able to do it.
There's a saying, worse things happen at sea, you know, and it really is. It's a really dangerous environment, and you need people around you that have your back and you have their back. And that loyalty and trust, for me, is the most important thing. And I say, you know, to my crew, I am loyal to my... Respect is earned. You know, you earn your respect from your crew members by showing them that you dig deep too, and that you do stuff, and you do the crap jobs as well. Because they're like, well, Skipper does it, so I'll do it. You know, if he does it, why wouldn't I do it? It's like, that's, you have to lead from the front. And I've started as a deckie. You know, I've worked my way up. And I know what it's like. And I treat people with respect. I give you the rope to hang yourself, basically. It's yours. Like, I've employed you. I trust you that you can do your job. Like, and you do with it what you want. But you make a mistake and you start to go, then you know, unfortunately, we're going to have to part ways, because, you know, that respect has been broken, that loyalty has been broken. So, but yeah, I mean, it's great.
It's one of, you know, obviously loyalty, all of these things, you know, they'll, if you get a good functioning crew, I don't think there's anything better, to be honest. You do make, you know, the industry will breed you lifelong friends forever, and insane experiences. But like you said, there's a few things now, I think, that are coming to the forefront, which are definitely lacking. And because, you know, the industry, for whatever reason, is maybe not hitting head on some of the issues, you've kind of decided to do some stuff anyway.
Yeah.
You just get, maybe explain what you're up to, what you've got going on.
Well, no, I've seen in the years, and I've been wanting to do it for a long time, but I'd never really been in the right headspace myself, maybe through my own employment or what was going on in my job and everything like that. But working for the person that I work for and having the people around me and what's going on in my own life, I was like, do you know what? And also my son, who's 14, was like, yeah, you know what? I think I'd be quite interested in getting into yachting. And I was like, woo, 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 woo. Like, you know, and you do find yourself going, like, get a proper job. And it's like, but that's the problem. You know, there's no support system. There's no structure necessarily in yachting. You're kind of left to your own devices. Find your own way. And so that's why. And, you know, everyone's in WhatsApp groups, but lots of different WhatsApp groups, and everything's fragmented. And it's very easy to put things down as isolated events when you're just getting little pockets of people going, hey, we've got this problem. And it's like, yeah, but that's just that group there. They've said that. But it's also happening in that group and that group and that group and that group. But there's not one space where everyone is, which is just so unheard of in any industry. Like, you have one place where you find your information about your industry, be it banking, aviation, everything. Like, this is what's affecting your industry. This is where it changes. This is where you get your information. This is where you can talk about it. These are the events you can go to in order to find out more about it. Whereas in yachting, it's not. It's just like, yeah, well, this is happening, maybe, but only in that WhatsApp group we've put this out and we put that out. And it's just too fragmented. So basically, we've put together through the Yacht Workers Council a platform where everything from mental health, training, all your documents compliance, like marketplace where you can sell things that are yacht related. You know, the amount of times I've been in port and we've had something break and we're like, oh my God, we need that spare, but it's going to take 3 days to arrive. But maybe the boat, seven boats down, has got that spare on board, aren't doing anything for the next week. And it's about keeping the industry going and giving people structure and support along with it. You know, unfortunately, you hear all kinds of horror stories about people and their contracts and certain incidents happening on board and them just being put on a plane and sent home. And it's like, whoa, how does that happen? Like, that's not the correct way of doing it, but it's just kind of rip the plaster off, get rid of it. So, yeah, we're trying to create this platform for Yacht Crew, made by me, Yacht Crew, and the development team, and lots of other external factors who all have great insights into the various factors, mental health, training and everything. Like, I don't profess to be a professional in any of those, but the people that we're bringing in are, and therefore they can advise you on what you should be doing or what you should be looking for or what you should be entitled to. And by doing that, we strengthen the industry, we make the experience better for the owners, and we elevate everything. The only people who have a problem with it are people that have been doing well out of a broken system, and that's it. So I mean, that's what we're trying to do, bring all Yacht Crew into one space and allow people to choose their own career paths and ask real professionals within their industry, because you tend to ask people who are on board your boat, like, I'm just starting out, would you think I should carry on deck? And then they go, well, actually, I want to be the bosun next, not him. No, no, you should go and be like an engineer, probably. I'll do engineering. And then you're like, oh, right, maybe I'll do that. I'll do, yeah, you need to do your AEC. And then they go off there because someone else is actually kind of guarding the next promotion on their boat. It's not the way it should be. You should be like able to access everything from one space. And it's quite a simple science. And like I say, by doing that, by giving people all the tools they need for a career in yachting, we elevate it. And everything, like, there's good management, there's good legal support, there's good mental health, there's good contractors, there's good shipyards, there's good everything in this industry, but there's also bad ones. And like, what we want to do is make sure that the good ones thrive and the bad ones either change and get better or they disappear.
We'll get out.
Exactly, and it's the same with crew, you know. Unfortunately, there's bad crew as well, you know, and we need to draw a line under that as well, you know. Bad crew make bad experiences and make a bad environment for other crew, so they shouldn't be in this industry. And by highlighting it, then we make the experience better. And like we say, happy crew, happy boat, happy owner. And if we make this platform, which we have, when we launch and we get the crew into one space, then we can start to try and create this. And I hopefully have that happy crew environment, because people are educated in what they should be getting, what they should be entitled to, how they can progress in their career, and they feel supported. When you feel supported, you can grow. When you feel like you're left out in the woods, it's like, I have no one to turn to. I don't know where to go. What should I do? And then you leave yourself open to exploitation, manipulation. And that's what happens. You see it all the time in yachting. People, that's what you get paid. Or no, those tips, no, we take, the heads of the department take more. What on earth are you on about? Like, we all have the same basis. That's not, but it happens. And it shouldn't. And
I've ever heard. I mean, tips is just one thing. I mean, that's a massive bugbear for a lot of crew. But the best one I've heard is it's percentage. So it's worked out how many years you've been on board and what position you are is what you get. So then if I was not being too cynical about captain, that fucking always works in your favour. Because you're generally on board the most, you're the most senior, so I'll take a really big tip.
It's just so ridiculous. And the poor old Decky at the bottom. But the deckie, if he's not doing his job, it's like if the girl in laundry or on housekeeping or on service, like, everyone has the same level of importance within that experience. You remove one section of it, suddenly everyone's clambering around to try and fill that position and help and pick up. And the service drops, which means the experience drops, which means overall it's not the same and it's not as good. So therefore, put that person back in and they're entitled. I mean, it's just, I hear it, unfortunately. In my view, it's mental. How people run their own boats is obviously up to them. But I just, like, in the days where it used to be cash. In the days where it used to be cash, they used to walk in with the envelope, chuck it on the table in front of whichever crew member and go, count it, and we split it. That's the only way to do it. And now, obviously, everything's on volley.
It's the only way to build morale.
Exactly.
It's just crazy. Same as you, like, I've heard some stories, but my one is, you know, it's how many years you've worked on board to seniority. I mean, it's like, well, that's just a scam, really. It's like a pyramid scheme. It's just the winner is always the captain. And he implemented that. Well, that's really good.
Also, unfortunately, a lot of the times you learn from those around you. So if one of those crew then goes on to be a captain in their time, it's like, well, no, this is the way. And it's like, no. That's broken. Like, but unfortunately, that's it. You pick up the habits of people that you're around. Like I say, my first captain, Dan Pawley, amazing, absolute legend. I've worked under some great captains. Adrian O'Neill, who unfortunately is no longer with us. One of the best captains. Just treat people like a human being. It's that simple. Like, if you treat someone as you want to be treated yourself, just simple things like the ability to say, morning, how you doing? How's it going? You good? It goes so far. Yeah. Just common courtesies. You know, that some people like, no, I'm not talking to them. They're junior. Get over yourself. Like, genuinely. Like, just, I can't deal with that. I just really can't.
I'm really excited about your platform because it's one of those things that, you know, bringing crew together, because we all, word of mouth is probably one of the things we trust the most. You'll talk to the boat next door, you'll exchange, we exchange a lot of information like that. So for me, kind of hearing what you're planning to do, it's just an expansion of that, you know, that crew generally trusts crew the most.
It's like having kids.
So it'll be interesting to see. And if it's run by crew, you then also get, you know, they're more likely to buy into it if it's kind of, you know, any.
We also have a responsibility. We have a responsibility ourselves as crew to stop waiting for someone else to fix it. This is the problem, like, in my view. And I've been guilty of it myself. I'm like, I've constantly been waiting for things to change. Like, okay, well, this year might be different. And it doesn't come. So I'm like, okay, cool. Well, maybe we do it ourselves. And then we relay the information to the organisations and the management companies about how we feel. And it's unfiltered because management has a very, very difficult role to play. They sit on the fence between owner and crew. And they're looking after crew welfare and owner expectations. Now, if those two conflict, well, who's paying to keep the lights on? It's business, and I get that. Business is business. So you have to kind of go, well, sir, or, you know, as one company, who I can't name, but they did the contracts for a boat that I was working on, and my owner kept on changing that contract from, like, permanent to, oh, it was just seasonal. And that employment company went, I'm sorry, James, but we're going to have to cut ties because, you know, we can't go like this. We leave ourselves too exposed and we don't believe in what's going on. And I was like, well done you. Like, brilliant. If only there were more businesses within this industry that had that level of integrity that were like, this isn't right. This exploitation is incorrect. Like, and that's the bottom line. One of my favourite words, you can't argue with incorrect. Like, no, that's incorrect. Like, you can't get away with doing that. But in this industry, unfortunately, it's a bit like the Foreign Legion. You know, you're kind of you're left. Well, it is. Like, I always find that it's like getting new crew on board. You don't really know who they are. because, you know, they were in this or that, and then suddenly now they're in yachting, and you're like, okay, why is that? That's a bit strange. But, you know, give someone the chance, and then they're on their best behavior for the first 3 months, and then they go out and have a wild one. You're like, okay, all right, that's why. You know, and it's a really tough environment to be in, yachting. It's a pressure cooker.
It's not for the faint heart.
No, and I think that's the problem. It's not for the faint heart. Like below deck, I think they've glamorized and made it seem like people, you know, they party all the time, get paid loads of money. We don't really have a work ethic. It's like, couldn't be further from the truth. 99% of crews out here are professionals. You know, the last thing they want to do is sleep in an owner's cabin or sit in an owner's jacuzzi, because guess what? You're going to have to clean it afterwards. Like, why would you want to do that? It's, you know what I mean? It's like, think past that. And the money side of it, when you put into actual how many hours you work for what you earn, and you break it down on an hourly basis, because bear in mind, you're always on standby, regardless of whether you're owner on, guests on, charter on. You're on standby. Alarm goes off in the middle of the night. Guess what? You're getting up and dealing with it. It's not like, oh, this isn't fair. I'm not on this. Owner's not on. Why am I doing? Like, no, you're dealing with it. I think that everything, the standards, if there is such a thing, and everything should reflect that, basically. And that's what we're trying to create. It's just somewhere where people can go, get everything they need in one space rather than having to go to 35 different websites in order to try and get it. And it's great for all the people in the industry, contractors, suppliers, management companies, because there's no wastage. Everyone's there. Everyone's in one spot, you know? And if you want to talk and find out what people's shipyards, you know, you're building a new Lursen and you're like, oh, this is for our new 60 meter. This is the crew mess we're thinking. What do you guys think? Well, yeah, I mean, that would work. And the chief stew going, well, to be honest, that upper pantry doesn't really work because I'd have to do this and the flow and all this. And, you know, getting that actual real-time feedback to them and everyone else in the industry, I think is invaluable. And that's the idea behind the platform, is to elevate the industry as a whole. And things like your podcast, you know, having an area where people can put their podcasts so that yachties can look and go, wow, okay, cool, that's good. And people can discuss things and feel comfortable to do it in an environment that is made for us, yacht crew.
Yeah. I think that's one of the, you know, just to kind of finish up, that's one of the reasons why, you know, I think it's important, you know, in this day and age, we're having more space to discuss things. And if you look at all the podcasts that come out, you know, yes, captain, you know, probably captains get invited on podcasts more than anybody else. But what about everybody else?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, when you're bringing up an issue, you know, SCCW's just had an expansion for mental health. Great. We want to talk about, you know, to some crew members about how they feel about it, what they want about it, you know, what their experiences. I think, you know, this is an exciting time. But I do think, you know, we need to capitalize on it. And like you said, you know, it's now time for us to get action and get involved rather than waiting for someone to change it.
Yeah, we have a responsibility as crew to go, you know what, you've had your chance, I'll go. It's our turn now.
Yeah.
And like, yeah. And if you, we're happy to relay that information to you as to what we're talking about, and you can have the insights into that, but you've had it. Nothing's really changed. So now we'll tell you how it is, essentially. And when we have a responsibility as crew to take the reins ourselves and start thinking about our own careers and our own futures and our own mental health and our own training and everything else. And, you know, when we have that responsibility, and we're just trying to give people that platform in order to have all of it in one space. So, yeah, it's exciting.
It's an exciting time. We're hopefully going to do an episode soon where you can have anonymous stories. Some of the stories are just crazy. But yeah, then that kind of, as long as it's, you know, it's all done, not hurting anybody or anything else.
The stories that we have from being in this industry I mean, would make some of the best reading on the planet. I mean, I've been told, oh, you should write a book, and it's like, yeah, no chance. Like, you can't use anyone's names. You can't use any, like, the stories you could just make up as you go along, basically, but they are so extreme of what I've seen over the 20 years that people would be like, nah, you've just made that up. There's no way. And it's like, if that's what you think, cool. You know, that kind of almost takes the onus off me to be like, yeah. I don't need to tell you that it's real, and it's like, by giving people's names, it's just like, no, no, that definitely happened. And I'm sure there are people out there who have got way wilder stories than I have, but yeah, I've definitely got some that will raise your eyebrows a little bit.
There's loads. It would be really nice. I might do an anonymous, write in your stories. No names, no boats, no anything, but just like, there are some crazy ones out there. Thank you so much for being on
the Balls of Wisdom podcast.
I really do appreciate you taking the time.
No, it's been great. I love it. It's just nice. It's, you know, it's platforms like this that's just nice to actually talk about what's relevant. And yeah, I am a direct person, but I think there's no other way. In this industry, I feel you have to be, because when you leave things to fester and you don't kind of address them head on, those small things can turn into massive things. And I think that's what's happened in yachting. We just haven't addressed them as they've come up. We've gone, we'll get to that. And then we find ourselves in the situation we are in.
No, well, thank you so much for taking thank the time to speak to my listeners. It would be really nice to check in once you're all launched.
Yeah, definitely.
What the feedback is and how that's going. So I might come back to you with another Balls of Wisdom episode at some point.
Yeah,
So listeners, if you've enjoyed this episode of Balls of Wisdom, or you're looking for something else, we've got the Super Yacht Laundry podcast, please check it out. But until next time, stay safe, and we'll be back again soon.